Okay, the Mincing Rascals are back after a little bit of a break. Hi, it's John Williams, and thanks for finding our podcast again. So here we go. Did Chicago's media overdo it on the pot coverage this week? We'll start there. We talk about former Governor Rod Blagojevich, who this week asked if Nancy Pelosi would try to impeach Abraham Lincoln. Blago, what are you up to? The Rascals discuss. People are leaving Illinois, and that's not a good thing. We'll get into that. And the Rascals make their predictions for 2020 on issues like who wins the presidential election in November. And if you spot the White Sox 10 games, do they win more than the Cubs? Hey, could you make your New Year's resolution to tell your friends about the Mincing Rascals? Let's get more listeners still and expand this party. Give us a good rating. Tell your friends. Happy New Year. Here we go. Today is Thursday. It's January 2nd, 2020. Happy New Year. It's 12:43 in the afternoon. This is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals, a podcast we've been recording, by the way, for going on 4 years now from the studios of WGN Radio in Chicago. You can hear me weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
I'm Austin Burt, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute.
And I'm Heather Sharon, the Managing Editor and City Hall Reporter at the Daily Line.
I'm Eric Zorn, the Resolute columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
Why'd you say Resolute, Eric?
Because I have resolutions.
Did you guys see? I was going to just mention this by way of saying Happy New Year, and then I want to talk about some Illinois news. We can come back to Trump land, and we're also going to do Eric's survey of predictions for us for the new year. But the president was at Mar-a-Lago for New Year's Eve with the First Lady, and as they were walking through one of the ballrooms, and the music's blaring in the background. The audio isn't great, so I'll play it here, but maybe it's just as best I read it. A reporter said, "What's your resolution?" And the resolute president, who then they say Donald Trump 73, as though that helps to explain this answer. The First Lady says, "Peace in the world."
What's your goal for the peace in the world?
Peace is right, but I'm not sure you're supposed to say a resolution out loud.
Then the president said, "Peace is right, but I'm not sure you're supposed to say a resolution out loud. I don't want to say what my resolution is because I think I might jinx it, right? But I can tell you, we really have a good resolution, and it's a resolution for our country. We love our country. Our country has never done better than it's doing right now.
We love our country. Our country has never done better than it's doing right now."
That is such a perfect Donald Trump quote because it's 75 more words than are necessary.
And none of them, have any bearing on the question.
Right. And he mistakes a New Year's resolution with blowing out candles on a birthday cake. That's the wish that you make that you're not supposed to say.
Happy New Year. The cannabis culture overtook Illinois, the likes of which you just don't see a news story run through the state very often.
It's a big deal. I am really tired of this story already.
I am too.
It's one day into this, and I can't read another story about it right now. I'm overloaded. I just think it's interesting that I see these stories, big front page stories, people lined up. I see the Sun-Times Tribune. I just can't read those stories. I'm a bad news consumer, but will the panel disagree with me on this?
I think the media coverage was commensurate with people's, experience with it and excitement about it. It's a very rare instance where you have a policy change that intersects with the daily lives of people in such like a clear way. I was very surprised at just the pictures of people waiting in line. I think I expected to see a lot of sad white dudes. And it was
bros.
It was bros, and it was all different. There was men, women, old, young.
I think
all
it
races.
Depended on the neighborhood. I mean, where I live, it looked like the crowd going into a Cubs game, but I live near Wrigley Field, and it looked totally recreational. It was not sad men. It was guys and gals getting ready.
Just a few minutes ago, the state announced the number of transactions yesterday.
Wait.
So what do you think?
Let me guess. Transactions.
Please tell me it was 420,000. Please tell me it was 420,000.
Oh God, that would be so awesome. Actually, I talked to somebody today, and they said they had 450 transactions.
Okay, more than 77,000 transactions.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So that's and more than 3
is
million.
Is that more than they expected? I have no.
I don't know. They're just
$100 $100 to $200 a purchase.
Yeah, over $3 million in purchases
One day. Yeah,
I think that's about 2,000 per dispensary. I think there's 30 some that are open.
Yeah. So that's not that many. It doesn't sound like that many.
Well, because there are no recreational dispensaries in Chicago.
Right.
It's only the medical marijuana dispensaries that got licensed to also sell recreational.
I mean, they were almost all to max, weren't they? I mean, there were people on call lists to come back today. So.
Yeah, right. Did you guys think it was fun, appropriate that the lieutenant governor was a notable purchaser yesterday? She was on TV, and there she was with her bag. She had gummies, I think, some sort of edible. But no, there's nothing inappropriate or wrong about that, right?
No, that's legal product. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
Well, I do, just because I'm a boomer. And because it's legal, but does the governor or lieutenant governor walk out with a fifth of vodka going, come on, everybody, drink up. We're going to get some money from you. Woohoo. That's still what it feels like.
I think it brings a little respectability to it, you know, that this is where we are now. It's a brand new world and all of that. And stop putting this on the boomers, because I think the boomers are probably getting high as many as most people.
Can I have the opinion that we just shouldn't have a lieutenant governor's office at all?
Oh, yes. I will second that.
You want to save the money? Is that what you guys are all about?
I mean, that's great policy? That she did that. But.
Well, and there are, what, 4 deputy governors or something like that?
There's lots of them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I do not know. Not only did I know the existence of that, I don't know one of them.
Christian Mitchell, Saul Flores, and I'm missing
Hines.
A couple. Yes, yes.
Dan. Wow.
Dan Hines, right?
Boy, that's the geeks among us that know that.
Well, it used to be that the lieutenant governor and the governor were elected separately, which was bizarre, and that's how we got Pat Quinn. And I'm not saying that in a bad way necessarily, but Quinn and Blagojevich
I'm saying that
it wasn't like Blagojevich picked Pat Quinn. Pat Quinn picked himself. He ran for lieutenant governor. He won. So that's how we got Pat Quinn.
I think it also goes to how we got Jim Thompson one term, right? With the LaRouche's. Mark Fairchild was nominated to be lieutenant governor for the Democrats. So Adlai Stevenson was stuck with a LaRouche on his ticket. You don't recall that?
I do recall it, but I'm not sure. Did that make a difference in the election?
I think it was a very close election, and I don't know I don't know what they ended up doing with
Fairchild.
He ran
as an independent, and Fairchild just ran. He did run.
I want to know what you guys have against Pat Quinn. I like Pat Quinn.
No, I wasn't
making a face.
I didn't want to editorialize on Pat Quinn. I was just doing a little history lesson.
Not too much of a tangent, but he's doing something really interesting right now in Evanston right now, which is to get people to get ballot referenda directly on the ballot with petition signatures. So if you have an issue that you really care about in Evanston, if you get enough petition signatures of people in the city, the city council has to vote on it. And if they don't, it goes directly to the ballot.
Well, of course, he tried and failed to put the 2-term limit on the mayor in Chicago on the ballot by collecting enough signatures. Ultimately, wasn't successful, but only because of a technical issue. He put 2 referenda questions on the same petition. He also wanted to create an elective consumer advocate position in the city of Chicago,
which is how he came up. As a consumer advocate anyway. Right.
But it was what Heather describes was such a strange rookie mistake for a guy like Pat Quinn, whose whole life is about passing petitions
and reform. And by the way, that idea of his, refresh my memory now about the mayoral thing.
Well, this was when everybody thought Rahm Emanuel was going to run for a 3rd term and win handily. And this was sort of Quinn's attempt to head that off, because it would have been on the same ballot as Rahm's reelection, which would have set up a really interesting legal and political question. What happens if Rahm is reelected and that passes at the same time?
A ballot initiative passes that keeps you from running for a 3rd term?
Right. But you've already won a 3rd term. So what happens?
I didn't realize that it was a Quinn mistake. I thought that there was a rule that you could only have 2 referenda on the city ballot, and the aldermen always sort of packed them early and pushed out the others.
I think that question never got answered, and that is a wrinkle in the law also, where they say we resolve that motherhood is a good thing and apple pie is the best of the pies and so on, and they stuffed the ballots and said, well, we don't have room for your important question.
Okay, one more since we're doing this. Isn't Pat Quinn the guy, and only Zorn will remember this and know this, who was behind reducing the number of legislators?
No, it's the only successful citizen-initiated ballot question in the history of
Illinois. That was back when I was a kid. I used to pass out stickers for, in each district, you could vote for 3.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You remember that? Yeah, and Quinn, and that was 70s.
Right. It was 1980 cutback amendment was Quinn.
Washington's 80. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people think that was a really big mistake, that it contributed to a lot of the polarization in Illinois.
I want to read to you guys just one thing, and then we'll leave marijuana land. But this is the receipt somebody sent me. And this is powerful, I think. They've made three $70 purchases. It came to about exactly $220. The taxes on this person's cannabis receipt are $82.50. So their $220 of pot came to $302.50.
Austin might know this. How do our tax rates on marijuana compare to California and Colorado?
I just sent an email to the Tax Foundation this morning asking this question because they track the recreational marijuana rates. It's not a good – we don't have a good apples to apples yet because Illinois has this interesting tiered structure based on the potency of THC. But yeah, I was seeing receipts with effective total tax rates of like 37-38%. And the expert literature on rolling this out as a new industry, and this is actually what the U.S. government did after Prohibition, is you need to ramp up you need to start low with the tax rates so you don't wedge the black market. Like, this price is so much higher than what people would be used to paying for marijuana, and they're just going to keep they don't make the behavior change to go legal. So you want to start low and go high. Illinois started really high.
So, which means the dealers are going to survive or will be more likely to thrive.
Yeah, there was a good piece in the Reader on that. I think Maya Dikmosova did a piece where she traveled around with a weed guy. I think she called him Weed Man, and she talked all about it. And the guy was like, hey, this is going to be great. You know, he was fine with it.
Well, because I think it's targeting a different market. You know, it's targeting those Wrigleyville bros who would never think to go to a drug dealer and buy directly, but they want to buy an edible where they know the amount and they know the potency and they can feel like they're not breaking any laws.
So the bros, I'd never heard that term before either, are introducing themselves to legal marijuana.
Correct.
They're going to begin to enjoy it. It'll become part of their life. Then they'll look at the $82 tax bill and they'll go find Weed Man.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot.
Who also has home delivery, which is, you know, I mean, I'm just saying.
I think it's less the new customers. It's more that people are getting priced out of a product that they would buy anyways. And so the black market still thrives. A public safety problem.
Well, I was talking to somebody today who was talking about the vaping market. And if I would advocate for anything about the state and the drug business, it's that if this is a regulated, safer product, then that's sure going to be a good for everybody. Rod Blagojevich wrote an op-ed piece for a website called Newsmax, a conservative pro-Trump website. I don't know if the president reads it. I don't know how much he actually clicks through on websites. But he wrote a piece saying that he's a fan of Abraham Lincoln and that if Nancy Pelosi were the Speaker of the House when Lincoln was president, she would have moved for his impeachment as well. And that what's happening now is the ultimate stealing an election from people. This is very undemocratic. So he puts that in Newsmax, hoping that, I guess, the president or somebody's going to see it and tell him, boy, Blago is sure carrying the bucket for you, sir. Look at another favorable review for Donald Trump via Rod Blagojevich.
But Blagojevich is right, essentially. The Congress at the time was virulently anti-Lincoln, anti-emancipation, you know, anti-Civil War, and they probably would have impeached Lincoln, but
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, Lincoln did not have a huge amount of support in Congress.
This Congress would have impeached
him. No, she's saying
I'm talking about the 1850s Congress.
Well, but I'm sorry, has the Constitution changed between now and then?
No, but the will to do it.
Right. I'm just saying.
I mean, they did shortly after Lincoln.
Right, but it's weird to say, you know, Lincoln was this great president and these terrible people would have impeached them like these terrible people would impeach you, but the terrible people back then were straight up racists who wanted to enslave African Americans. It's just a weird
Yeah, the analogy is troubling. You know, Heather is right. I mean, Lincoln was one of our most controversial, most polarizing presidents. There's no question about it. And he did things like, you know, the suspension of habeas corpus and things like that that were very divisive. And even the Emancipation Proclamation. Right? Yeah, even the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, history has redeemed him in so many ways that when we look back, we say, well, you know, he was fighting the good fight for the right things. And I think that's Blagojevich's subtle message to Trump, which is that history will redeem you and that history will look upon you as this persecuted Lincoln figure who did so many great things. I mean, and I don't think Blagojevich believes a word of it, frankly. I think he I think he's just trying to get his pardon or his commutation.
I'm glad he wrote it, just because I love the video of him shirtless and gray-haired walking around the prison yard.
Can the media find a different picture? There's a million photographs of Rod Blagojevich.
That's the most recent one, though.
The only one we seem to have now is him shirtless with white hair.
But
that's
the video, you know, the short video.
I'm thinking of the still.
No, there's a short video, and it looks as if you're catching Sasquatch in the wild or something, because it's from a distance, and, you know, you can just sort of see
credit
walk.
To the Tribune for sending a photographer and a reporter out there.
Seriously, this guy was famous for being coiffed and well-dressed, and the one I saw online, the still picture of him, was him, you know, with his prison garb on, no shirt, he's been working out, he looks great, he's got that mop of white hair now, and I think it's editorial.
Well, no, I disagree with that. I think Austin just said it's the most recent picture. Yeah. You wouldn't run an old picture of him, would you?
I wouldn't do like they do with Ann Landers or Dear Abby, where it's really old and they don't look like that at all.
Right.
But he doesn't look that much different with his clothes on.
Well, maybe this shirt. I'll give you the shirt.
How about running his mug shot? To me,
this is akin to that.
Maybe
it's
the
editorial.
Pride, though. He looks pretty good for his age.
He does. I mean, on the upside, he looks buff. So
maybe
he's got
the pride of his physique offsets the embarrassment of his hair.
He'll probably would,
it's a trade.
He would make the trade if he could.
I just feel bad for Patty Blagojevich. It's got to just be like, Lucy with the football and Charlie Brown and feeling like you came so close several months ago.
Come on, Charlie Brown. I'll hold the ball and you kick it. Ha! You'll pull it away and I'll land flat on my back.
And to just be nowhere. And, you know, as a mom with two daughters, I sympathize and empathize with that. But, I mean, if he was going to pardon him, you would have thought he would have done that.
It could be his resolution for this year.
Oh, we don't know.
This time I'm going to kick that football clear to the moon. God!
I think if he's going to do it, he's going to do it after the election. I think he realized, he was talked out of this right by Republicans in Illinois, LaHood and Kinzinger and people like that. They went to him and said, don't do this. This guy was bad news and it'll send the wrong message.
There were five of them, as I recall, Eric.
That's right. And so I think he may, in trying to weigh this, it's not obvious how politically it's going to play. And he's in no hurry. He's not going to waste a single iota of political capital on Rod Blagojevich.
Well, because there's no capital to be gained. Illinois is all going to be blue no matter what, so what does he care, right?
Well, that's probably true. Although it could
he
play
could
around
make problems for Pritzker, maybe. I don't know. That was
could,
my only.
And it could play around the country. I mean, Dick Durbin wants Blagojevich out, so it's like going to. I mean, I think the political calculation is too complicated for Trump to worry about right now. And it's just like, why? Unless he's just saving it as a smoke bomb to throw when there's some terrible other headline that he wants to get off the front page. So.
But about his point, I was a little surprised to see what you guys said when he said that Pelosi would have impeached Lincoln now, too. And somebody texted into the show today and they said, listen, if Blago is saying that this is stealing the election, there's nothing more democratic than the people through their representatives overturning the election of the president. If he's a king, you have to cut off his head. This impeachment process is very democratic. It's not stealing anything. It's of the people.
It's sad because we're debating the merits of this op-ed, which is clearly like a political calculation, right? So, and not to cannibalize our podcast audience, but a great podcast on the saga of that desperation is Dave McKinney's Public Official A on WBEZ, which is fantastic. And he interviews Patty a lot for that.
Gee, Eric, I wonder why we haven't been able to get Patty on this podcast.
Well, Patty famously won't come on WGN because I occasionally am on the air here, I guess, is her reasoning. I mean, I don't know. Heather feels bad for Patty Blagojevich. I look upon her as an enabler of her husband and as someone who benefited
and who could have gone to jail, by the way.
And who continuously is going on Fox News trying to get similar, you know, sound bites.
I mean, 100%.
Right?
And she, you know, she had this phony baloney job with Tony Resco, and you know the whole thing was just, you know, I don't feel she's an enabler if not a co-conspirator in all this, and I feel bad for the girls. That's who I feel bad for.
And yet the sentence was probably too long.
I'm a big yes on that. Way too long. How about you?
Probably yes.
Eric?
A little bit too long.
Even you. And Heather, do you have an opinion about that?
I don't. I mean, the judge reaffirmed it twice. If he had had second thoughts, he had a chance to lessen it.
But you are sympathetic at least to the Blagojevich family.
Yes. I am.
The girl. Yeah. Let's make it the girls. How about
sure.
that?
Sure.
Let's
yes.
make it that.
I'm imagining.
As a mother of girls. You can.
Yes, as a mother of girls, like a father of daughters.
The state's population is dwindling for, what, 6 years straight now, Austin?
That's right.
Is that a problem?
Everything's fine. The dog meme with the fire.
I suppose that's the latest census data, and it's demonstrating that we not only have lost population for 6 years straight, but we are, as a percentage, as a percentage, maybe as a total, we're in the top two or three in the country. What's going on here, and does it matter?
It matters a great deal. So what we essentially saw here was, for the first time, the full decade in one picture for Illinois. And it was essentially the first ever lost decade for the state. We've never seen this much population decline over a decade. We've only seen it once before, which is a very small decline in the 80s. We saw 169,000 people. That's the amount by which our population declined over the decade. No other state saw as large of a population loss in raw terms. In percentage terms, the only one worse is West Virginia. And when you're in the same sentence as West Virginia on any demographic issue, yeah, it's a huge problem. It should be a five-alarm fire. As has been discussed endlessly, this is driven by people leaving the state. Nearly 900,000 people on net left Illinois over the decade. That's as if a third of Chicago left. Our population decline is as if all of Naperville was wiped off the map immediately. It has very, very, very serious implications. And the question should not be, you know, oh, woe is me, Illinois is terrible. It's what's the policy response to this? And that has been so lacking in both the General Assembly and in the governor's office. The panacea to everything, all of our state's woes, is supposed to be this tax hike, when all of the evidence points to the fact that investment is not attractive enough in Illinois to bring people and jobs here. And that's why people are leaving. Well, and yet we are going to punish that investment even more as a solution to this problem. And I think that's totally
because
backwards.
Of income tax, graduated income taxes,
yeah,
things like
and,
that.
And hike on corporate income tax rate, too.
Well, I agree that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, but it's not clear to me that the policy response is what we're talking about. I mean, you look at states like Minnesota and New York.
High taxes.
They have higher taxes in New York and Minnesota than they have here. They have a steeper graduated income tax in Minnesota. So
New York is the only one worse than us on out migration in Alaska.
So are people just like looking at their tax bills? They're like, oh, we're paying 7% instead of 6%, and they're leaving. I mean, I think there's got to be sort of a broader explanation as to why Illinois and why not. I mean, Wisconsin's got a graduated income tax. I mean, it's like, what is it about the state? What is it about the way we are putting things together that is driving people away? If there is anything that we can put our finger on, I mean, I read these things about, oh, let's change the way our pensions are funded. I'm not sure people are making decisions based on pension debt.
I don't think it's like a homo economicus argument, right? Like, people aren't perfectly rational and aren't going line by line with all of this stuff. But the survey data says number one most popular response for people who want to leave is taxes. The academic literature suggests that it is opportunity is the biggest driver of leaving. So people are finding better opportunities elsewhere. Neither of those things are helped. In fact, both are worsened by hiking taxes yet again on everybody. And that's the one policy response that we're left with.
So I wish that people would separate out. There are two issues here. One, people are leaving Illinois. And two, the births are not keeping pace with deaths. I mean, people are having fewer children. People are, you know, and immigration is down. So it seems like those are two distinct problems to me. And I don't know that by combining them, you're sort of accurately figuring out what the problem is, and that makes it really hard to figure out how to address it policy-wise.
Well, we can decompose them. So in the decade, if we rank Illinois, we're 48th out of 50 states on out-migration as a share of the population.
More people leaving our state than all but two other states.
That's
is
right.
This as net a share out of the population.
This is net.
Net.
And then if you do births and deaths, we're actually above average as a share of our population. So our natural increase actually should be masking some of these out-migration trends.
In other words, it's
but
worse
they're so
than
severe
it even
that
looks.
It's not.
But as I understand it, are just a pure out-migration, not net out-migration, but pure out-migration, and that means just the people who are leaving, not balancing them out with people who are coming, is not that bad. That we're somewhere in the middle of the pack of people who are just up and leaving, but we're not attracting. I think this is the issue, that we're not attracting people here to Illinois, and that's why our numbers. It's like people are leaving, but they're not coming. They're
because
not coming.
People are doing that in other states as well. Maybe it'd be nice if they'd come here, but they choose not to.
They're not coming here in the numbers that we need them. I think I would think that. I mean, am I stating the data correctly, Austin?
Yeah, that's right. So we're a huge outlier on in migration, and we're bad but not the worst on out.
Is that due geography there too? I mean, I keep hearing stories about Salesforce coming into Chicago, or other tech companies, the Fulton Market area. With that, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of tech jobs coming to.
But Chicago's losing population, too, remember.
Well, Chicago's losing population in specific areas, specifically the South and the West Side. So, but areas like downtown, like Fulton Market, those areas have surged. And I think my mom is probably a good example of this. She lived in Skokie for many years. She wanted to live downtown, so she bought a condo downtown. 10 years ago, I would have said, what, are you crazy, lady? What are you doing? Nobody lives downtown. And now a lot more people live downtown. So the census is, you know, going to be, I think, a watershed moment for Illinois, because once we have those numbers, I think we'll have the most complete picture of sort of what Illinois' population is. And politicians are going to take that data and they're going to use it to create new city council districts, ward maps, and Illinois legislative districts. And that's going to be a huge, massive fight, because there's really no possible way for the number of African-American aldermen to stay the same.
But I was wondering if this is sort of like on the national level, where we're not attracting enough immigrants.
Or we're not allowing them in.
We would do better if we had more people coming into this country, if for no other reason to pay into Social Security or to do the jobs that some of us don't want to do, some of the lower paying jobs. That's just an economic fact, right? Is there something similar to that in Illinois? Do we suffer because people aren't helping to pay down our pension debts?
Yeah, I mean, for every one person we lose in population, that's one less body to feed this massive amount of debt that the state has.
That could be our campaign slogan. Come to Illinois.
Right, exactly.
Help us pay down our debt.
Feed the beast.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, to Heather's point, it is important to decompose this stuff, because the policy levers that you actually really have as a state, you can pretty much only address that domestic migration factor. It's tough at a state level to increase a lot of, you know, your natural increase from births and deaths, and it's really tough from a state level to increase the number of immigrants. Those things are more structural. The things that can be reformed are on the flow of people from Illinois to other states and the people coming into Illinois from other states. Michigan is actually a pretty good example of this. So they had, when their fever broke, they were losing over 100,000 people per year on net to other states. And now this year they're down to 25. It's not good. They're the only other kind of state close to us that's in that bottom like 15 of states. But, you know, they made reforms to their tax laws there. They lowered taxes. They're a right-to-work state. They have a lot of investment from a lot of industry there. And you start to see that number turn around. And there's no reason to think that the same thing can't happen in Illinois.
Pendulum's going the other way, isn't it? My phone lines, my text lines light up with people going, my $18 trailer license is now $180 for my boat trailer. And Uber and Lyft and transfer fees and your vehicle stickers.
Vehicle stickers.
I was going to say, God. I'm about to get hit with that. I thought I was going to be really smart and pay my vehicle registration before the first of the year, before the price goes up $50.
Yeah.
But because my license doesn't expire until January, I still have to pay.
So you're saying
that
people's
50.
Behavior is dependent upon the cost of things that they buy. Interesting.
And yet, I also just wondered if it wasn't the totality of it. Like, is anybody really proud of being from Chicago? Hoosiers? Illinois. Chicago, maybe.
Sure.
But Hoosiers love being Hoosiers. Minnesotans are obnoxiously proud. Probably Texans, too. Are Wisconsinites that way? I wonder if there's a pride index and where that would be, Austin, because I'll bet we wouldn't be very high.
And that's why I think we're better off not talking about the pension problems.
Just ignore it.
Well, I'll feel better. Right. I do think there might be something to that, too. The more that we all talk about the problems, I think that maybe doesn't exacerbate the problems, but refocuses Illinoisans on the problems and brings people down.
Well, sure, that's a consequence of that, but are you not seriously suggesting we don't address
talk about the pensions?
Things?
I'm not serious about that. I think Steve is making
a reasonable point that we have to keep it in context. And every time I say pension crisis, I wince a little bit, because crisis, I think, is one of those weighted terms.
I feel that way about crime.
Yeah.
And our crime rates have gone down again in Chicago, right? I mean, that's not a small factor, right?
But as opposed to crime, our pension problem is the worst of any state in the history of the nation. So I would
call
that
there you
crisis.
Go. There goes two more
see,
people moving out.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Austin.
Let's fix it. My point is, let's fix it.
He's got stock in U-Haul. That's the problem.
I want to go to Eric's survey, which is state and national stuff. But just real quickly, What should we know about Todd Stroger and Kerry Austin, two big names in Chicago?
They did not make the primary ballot. So the primary is March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. It's going to be a banner day for drunks and political reporters and politicians.
And drunk political
and
reporters.
Drunk
and
political reporters, yeah. So Kerry Austin was running for another term as committee person in the 34th Ward. She did not turn in enough signatures, so she is off the ballot. And the same thing happened to Todd Stroger, who wanted to revitalize his political career by running for a seat on the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District Board of Commissioners.
Yeah.
Did
they both want to be on the ballot?
Yes, they both filed. They both submitted petition signatures, but they simply came hundreds of signatures short, which is really shocking when you think of these two sort of stalwarts of the Chicago Democratic political machine, not even being able to get enough signatures.
What's the takeaway?
Well, I think the takeaway is it's more evidence that Ed Burke is an outlier in that he has been able to maintain his political career despite facing significant federal charges of corruption. Kerry Austin hasn't been charged. She says hasn't done anything wrong, but her offices were raided by the FBI, and that was apparently enough to make it impossible for her to get on the ballot for a committee person race. And Todd Stroger, I think, is a host unto himself, of course, the son of the late Cook County Board President. He was Cook County Board President. He lost to Tony Preckwinkle, and he sort of saw the Cook County Democratic machine slip from his family's grasp. But overall, the Democratic machine is just a shadow of what it once was.
I'll push back a little bit on that, and that is I'm not sure that Kerry Austin's troubles directly made it so people. I'm guessing that people did not refuse to sign her petitions, but she just didn't, for one reason or another, didn't get the organization.
That's what I think it's one in the same.
Or have the oomph of get
yeah,
people
I think
out
it's
there
one
because
in the same.
Because a lot of people will sign anything, right? I mean,
sure.
They will sign the petitions. You send somebody around, but if Todd Stroger doesn't have the organization, the support, the people around him to get those, he's not going to do it on his own.
Well, I mean, it would be fascinating to know exactly what happened. Like, did she just get a late start? Was her heart not in it? Or has she seen sort of her volunteers and her loyal campaign workers sort of melt away?
That's what I would suspect.
Yes. And I think
she's still vice chairwoman of the Cook County Democratic
she
Party.
Is.
So that is odd.
Think
right?
about that.
Right?
That's very odd.
That should just be a switch
strange.
You throw and bingo, the signatures appear.
Right. Absolutely. And you have endorsed slated candidates for Cook County Circuit Court Clerk Michael Carbonaggi and State's Attorney Kim Fox. Both of them are facing signature challenges.
So is this an avenue for Republicans or just different Democrats?
Different Democrats.
Okay, then.
Different Democrats. It's still Chicago, after all.
Eric Walker.
Aldermen are nonpartisan.
Right. Well, they do run. They do.
I know
run,
that, but aren't they all? They're all Democrats.
She's
right?
in the Cook County.
There are
Cook County
six Democratic Socialists of America. America. Four of them are running to join the Cook County Democratic Party leadership, which is a fascinating story that we will be covering very closely at the Daily Line, to toot my own horn. But also, you know, there are no Republicans on the city council. Anthony Napolitano of the 41st Ward, he says he's an independent, although he was elected the first time with help from the Chicago Republican Party.
Eric, you put out to your listeners or to your readers, I was one of them, I filled out the survey online at chicagotribune.com/Zorn, a survey of predictions, right?
Right. It's still open until tomorrow at noon, if anyone wants to.
Vote again, early. Vote often.
And today is Thursday.
Today is Thursday.
January 2nd, 2020. It's 1:16 in the afternoon, in case you get this in time.
Yeah.
So we cherry-picked some of your questions.
The number one is, this isn't actually one of my questions, but is Donald Trump still president on Election Day?
Well, there are different ways to ask this,
right.
I think. So okay. let's do that one.
Okay. Well, should we just go around the circle for each one?
I say yes.
Okay, starting with Bertrand.
He is still president on Election Day. Yes.
John?
I'm yes.
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 Yes, me too. Is there a trial in the Senate? If there's a trial in the Senate, how many Republicans vote against him?
Three.
I'm at two. Who are your? Who's your third?
It just sounds like a good number.
Romney, Murkowski,
and Collins.
Collins. Yeah.
One.
Two. Austin was?
One.
One. Huh? Who do you got?
Romney.
Heather?
I think it's four.
Oh, four. Nice.
I'm going with
because, and I'm only saying that because if you need four to get to a trial, so
either four or none.
Four or none.
So Alaska,
yeah.
Maine.
Alaska, Maine,
Utah.
Romney, and I think Cory Gardner is a little bit
Colorado?
Squishy.
Yeah.
Well, you may see those votes before the trial, and it's procedural votes, but
right.
In the end, voting against Trump, I say zero. Does Trump dump Mike Pence?
No.
John?
Yeah, why are you in love with this question? Where is that coming from?
This talk that he's going to dump Mike Pence for Nikki Haley.
Coming from Nikki Haley.
But, you know, I was thinking of questions. So.
Heather said no.
I'm a no. Bertrand, no.
We're all no's.
Okay, all
Does Trump commute or pardon Blagojevich?
No.
I think that as that's just a little card for him to play, consequences be damned. I'll say yes just because I think it's not a slam dunk no. I'm going yes.
No.
I think not.
I think yes, but at the end of the year after the election. Which Democrat wins the party's nomination?
Democrat. I'm going to say Joe Biden.
Yeah, I am too.
Biden.
I think if you look at the polling average, it's right now Biden has the best shot.
I am going out on a limb, and this goes along with my prediction last year that the leading Democrat at this point was going to be Beto O'Rourke. so take this with all the salt that you need. Amy Klobuchar.
I was going to say Lynn. She's also Lynn Sweet of the Sun-Times pick for the Democratic nomination.
Really, is she?
Yeah.
But these are different questions. Who do you think and who do you want? I mean, I don't want Biden, but I think Amy Klobuchar,
I was texting during the last debate with John, and Amy would give an answer, and then you could tell she was just kind of tickled with her own answer.
She'd be a great VP.
Okay, well, who will be the Democratic VP candidate?
I'm going to say, boy, it's going to have to be a woman, right? It has to be a woman.
If it's Biden, it almost certainly does.
I've got Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota.
It's got to be a woman of color. So I still think the California
Kamala
senator.
Harris?
Kamala Harris, maybe? Or someone. I don't get this whole Stacey Abrams appeal, but
I mean, I get her appeal, but I don't know that she's vice presidential material.
Heather, where are you going to go with?
I'm going to go with Julian Castro, who, of course, dropped out today.
Well, why are you putting him down since he's not in it now?
No, he's dropping out early gives you a nice leg up on vice president. You're not going to be throwing crap at the eventual nominee.
Where are you, Austin?
I was going to. So on Eric's survey, when I took it, I took the field. I took other.
Other. Yeah. Mm. That was a smart pick, probably. I'd pick Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio.
All right, what do you got next?
1 year from today, will the Dow close above or below 28.6? Where's this today?
Where's it today?
28.6. It's right about that.
I think it's going to. That's a good question.
Thank you.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say we're due for a little correction.
Yeah,
little loss.
I say we're below 28.6. I think we're 12 months flat or down. Zorn says...
I said down.
Down. Wow. Bertrand says down. Heather says...
Down. Oh, it's traditionally presidential election years are almost always down.
I think, policy uncertainty is bad. I would still say up.
Well, especially if a Democrat gets elected. I'd like to see a Democrat get elected, and I think that would tank the markets just as a reaction, even though it might be a more stable person.
Biden gets elected, is tanking the markets?
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
I remember election night, the markets went nuts when Trump was elected.
Dropped 600 points.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to retire.
The next day it was
boom, it comes back.
John, if you want to have a Democrat elected, just don't throw a party election night.
I had the best, worst election night party ever in 2016.
All the drinks were blue.
We have. My wife, Johanna, has the Hillary Clinton bottle of champagne that she took to a party, election night party. I was working that night, and she still has it. It's unopened.
Hasn't been opened.
It's going to be opened when there's a Democrat elected. And
what's next?
Will there be a vacancy on the Supreme Court this year?
Yes.
No. That's such a shame if it is. I mean, we're saying what?
Well, we're saying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies.
Any one of them could get hit by a bus.
They would be so irresponsible.
One of them could go hunting in Texas.
Wouldn't it be the height of irresponsibility to retire right now if you were on the Supreme Court?
And she, of all people, I don't think would be the one to do it.
It wouldn't be for someone, I don't know how old Clarence Thomas is, but if he wants to be sure that his legacy is secured, or any of the older conservatives, I don't know how old, Alito, those guys really aren't that old, though, are
right.
they?
Alito's not.
What does Clarence Thomas do to retire?
It guarantees a Republican successor.
Guarantees
he cares that much about that?
I honestly don't think he does. I think if you look at his writings, he's a blow up the whole system, I don't owe anybody anything type of justice. But that was the argument that Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have retired during Obama's term, and a lot of people who are very, very angry at her for not doing that.
But you also, his history with Biden, I do not think you'd want Biden to
this is very
be
true.
Appointing his successor, if anyone.
Because of the trial or the
hearings.
So, Eric, what's your answer to this one?
Mine is no. I think RBG's somehow going to hang on.
Are we all no's on this then?
No, I said yes.
Who
have you
wins?
Been here the whole time?
I'm a no.
Who wins more games next year, the Sox plus 10 or the Cubs? So you say that, are the Sox going to win? Okay, so Sox and Cubs, who's going to win more games? But you got to give the Sox 10 game bonus because they were pretty
500 season is 81 wins. I think the Cubs are going to win 88 games. So do the then all the Sox need to do is win 78 games. If you're giving me 10,
yep.
If you give me the Sox plus 10, I'll take that over the Cubs.
I'll say I'm going to say Cubs still.
Cubs still.
Sox plus 10.
Sox.
Sox plus 10 is.
Listen, I've got to go do the news. So can I just answer the next 10? It's yes, no, 13, and Mike Ditka.
Thank you, Steve. Is Mitch Trubisky the starting QB for the Bears the first game next year?
Brian Pace said yes. Yeah. I will trust him.
Yes. That's. I don't think anything changes between now and then. Yeah, I'm
unfortunately,
not sure
you're right. My answer is sadly yes.
Do the How Bears, about you, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
The Bears make the playoffs next year?
No. They are terrible.
Packers, Vikings.
They weren't that far this year. I'm a no.
I'm a yes, and everybody else is a no.
This is totally John's question. Are Kim and Kanye still married a year from now?
Absolutely. True love.
I'm kind of proud of that one.
You must have some inside knowledge or some inkling here that there's trouble in paradise, because I would just say yes, because I'm a believer in the institution. I don't know. I'd say
we should do a plus minus on their visits to Chicago, or whether or not they'll move to Chicago.
Oh,
as Kanye
that's a
promised.
Big fat no.
That would be fun. Just to make it fun, I'll say no. They're not married. Everybody else is.
Let's save this tape for next year. By the way, does Mike Madigan? Then we're going to get back to serious questions. Does Mike Madigan get indicted this year?
This might be the only one where I have no comment.
For professional purposes?
Kind of.
Fair enough. You can take it.
Just predicting.
Pass.
I mean, you know.
My problem is I know what I want. My question is, what do I think is going to happen?
That's the question.
I would say no. These guys always seem to slip out from trouble.
They don't always seem to slip out. I said the same thing about George Ryan when troubles were swirling around him. I said, there's no way that guy, with all his experience, would put himself in a position to get indicted.
Well, we're just talking about indicted, too. I mean, you can survive an indictment,
you can survive. It's not common in the federal system.
Indicted. Okay, I'm going to change mine to yes. You've convinced me. Yes, he gets indicted.
Oh, well, okay. No, I mean, I actually am going to go with no, because I think for the exact same reason that I gave for George
Oh, then
George
I'll go back to no. I'll go whatever you're saying. No, I'm a yes. He gets indicted.
So Austin is taking a pass on this.
I'm also taking a pass
on this. I'll vote for Bertrand and go with whatever I said. So that's two yeses.
So, here's a question. What's going to happen with Ed Burke? Acquitted or dismissed? Convicted or still awaiting trial?
Convicted.
Still awaiting trial.
I'm saying still awaiting trial because the system moves so slowly.
What's the one where they're slippery and they get away with it?
Acquitted.
That would be acquitted. Or
I'm down for an acquitted.
And the last one is, does Kim Fox get reelected?
No!
Yes.
I defer.
I'm a yes.
You say, you don't want to make a prediction. I was originally no, and then I'm thinking about that she's got three Democratic opponents, right? One's Fioretti, so he's not going to be a...
Right.
But the other two, and I think that she may slip by. It's the primary, the primary is the issue. The general election, she's going to go against, Fanakukan or whatever his name is?
Right.
Whoever wins the primary,
The Republican. But I can see her slipping through the primary with 42%, something like that.
Oh, that's right, because you don't need a majority.
You don't need
a
majority. So I'm going to say, yes, she's going to be reelected, but it's going to be really tough. And this Jussie Smollett story is going to remain large. And in fact,
what is your wisdom on that, by the way?
Two more.
We were talking about the death of the machine earlier, but she is still the golden child, really, of that system. And I think there's going to be a lot of ground game union support for her and all of the interests that really do, at the end, except in the case of her former boss, Tony Preckwinkle, the factors that at the end of the day decide those types of elections in Cook County are all in her favor.
You had a Smollett one.
Well, there's a Smollett question, which is, does he get recharged? Does Dan Webb, he's the special prosecutor, is he going to come back and say, hey, you know what, we've been a mistake, we're going to
do this? This is another, what do I want, what do I think?
No.
I'm not sold either way.
Here's the question. Just ask us this. Do you want him to go to jail for a very long time?
No,
yes.
You do? I don't want him. Yeah. I just want him to say, hey, I'm really sorry. I screwed up. That was a really stupid thing I did. I'm really sorry.
And I did that. And the whole thing was fake.
And the whole thing was fake, and I'm really sorry about it. And I want Kim Fox to explain what the hell she was thinking when she let him go. When she let him just waltz out of the Layton Court Center without saying he was sorry. In fact, he went to the microphones and talked about how vindicated he was, how innocent he was. That was really what was so galling about this.
That one still hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, and if she had just gotten him to plea and say, look, go away, I think everyone would have long forgotten this story. And the last one is, does Lori Lightfoot suffer some unseen, confidence-shattering scandal in 2020? This is your question, John.
I like it, and I think she does, just because there's just too many people to control. Look what happened to the communications director of one of her departments and stuff like that. I say yes. It's an inevitable consequence of being in that tall a position.
So I'm all on board with you in terms of I agree that the Chicago mayor's purview is far too wide, much wider than every other major American city. That said, confidence shattering is pretty intense.
A high bar.
She would have to, a top aide or something would need to be, there would need to be an indictment. I think there would need to be federal investigation into something. Short of that, I don't see confidence shattering in terms of sort of like a good government
thing.
So I'm going to say no.
Can you even imagine a scandal that would have shattered Rahm Emanuel's confidence?
Yeah. He'd be confident all the way to
the jail.
Who's
confident? Voter confidence or Lori Lightfoot's confidence in herself?
Confidence
shattering would be the public's losing faith in the that's what you
bar.
Are talking about.
I think that's a high bar. I'll say no.
Heather,
I'll
are you able to answer this one?
I will say that I think 2020 is going to be tougher than 2019 for the mayor because she managed to get the budget through the city council, but next year's budget is even harder and she has less room to maneuver and she has some very, very angry aldermen staring back at her during city council meetings.
Starting day one.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year for her, and the honeymoon is over. But I think she's getting okay marks kind of across the board from people right now. And you know, part of it is that she did manage to skate through without any real major property tax increases. So we'll see. It's going to be a much tougher year for her, but I don't know if it's going to shatter the confidence of the public in her. So I'm going to say no.
Eric, I'll ask this one. Do you guys see the Pope as having any confidence shatter altercations with women in a rope line? That's my favorite viral video of the year so
far. I'm Team Pope on this one.
So there's the Pope. This is the last thing I just want to bring up, but this is so fun. So there's the Pope. He's walking the rope line at St. Peter's Square on New Year's Eve, and he's reaching out to children and shaking their hands and touching their heads and passing out blessings. And he's about to sort of exit that area, and a woman who's been waiting, she gives herself the sign of the cross as he gets near. She's like, this is my moment. And he gets away, so she reaches out, grabs his hand, and then squeezes it and won't let go.
Well, and sort of pulls him off his feet a little bit.
And he's ticked. Yeah. So what does he do?
He slaps her hand
Pope
away.
Smash.
Pope slap.
He slaps her. And the irony is then he goes on to give a sermon about violence towards women.
Well, there's an argument to be made that it's about consent and that she did not have his consent to touch him in that way.
The Pope is right there. And you're going to let this moment slip away? She was talking to him and he slugged her. And then walked away.
Now it's a slug?
I think slug is perhaps overstated.
When a Pope slaps you, it's akin to a civilian slugging you. Really? You slap? But I'm with him completely. He's a human. At the end of the day, he's a human being, even though he represents Christ in the church on earth. But he's a human being, and he didn't like it. It was a very human reaction on his part.
And he did wait a beat and looked at her and held her hand for a bit before the slap.
I was glad that his black suits didn't all jump her. You know, that would have looked really bad because he's got his security detail.
Imagine if she had pulled him off his feet. That would have been...
Well, he's done this before. There was an incident at Easter a couple of years ago where somebody wanted to kiss his ring and he was like, no, and then they kept trying and he was like, no, but for real, and sort of pushed the person down a little bit.
Well, is he a germphobe? I think that was part of
that's
the...
Trump. You're
confusing
him with Trump.
I think that's what they said. Well, the time he slugged that lady, he's nervous about germs. All right, that's all the time we've got. I'm going to stay with slug because I think a normal slap is a papal slug. Eric, good to see you.
So let it be written, so let it be said.
Heather and Austin, and thanks for coming in. Steve Bertrand had to exit stage left. We're produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.